Welcome to Never Overnight, where the focus is the struggle, the success, and the story in between. My name is Binod Jacob, and I'm your host. Today's conversation is with my friend Dara Patel, and it took place in December of 2019. Since this podcast is about storytelling and motivation, I believe the lessons you learn here are timeless, regardless of when the conversation took place. As for Dara, she started her career as a teacher in Chicago. However, her hustle, networking, and work ethic brought her to Los Angeles, and eventually she became the director of the Andrew Nikku Foundation. So we take a deep dive into her upbringing, her educational experience, her move to Los Angeles, the power of the word yet, and so much more. Dara has experienced struggle, success, and this is her story. Hell, what do you do exactly?
Well, hi, Binod. I am a director of the Andrew Nikku Foundation, and I am also like his right-hand man.
So you were raised in Chicago, and I remember you telling me that Chicago is like a hybrid of New York and California. So what does that mean?
Well, it's a less crowded New York with a more laid-back career kind of day-to-day aspect, like it is on the West Coast. Born and raised there, winters are crazy, summers are amazing, and yeah.
What was your upbringing like? Because I know you have a brother and a sister, right? So were you the middle child?
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah, cool. No, I was a middle child. Like, you know, both my parents worked, middle class family. Family was big for us. So every weekend we were always together, and it was every weekend we did family things. We hung out. My mom is in education, so education was huge for her. Being Indian, education was like not even an option. You had to. It was like a requirement. So it was like my parents said, don't come home unless you have a degree, let alone a master's. So that's where the bar was set growing up.
Then that's how you got into education yourself, by becoming a teacher, right?
Kind of, sort of. Because, you know, the typical Indian stereotype, I was like, totally not for anything in medicine. I didn't want to do that. That was not something I knew. I knew from day one that that was not what I wanted. Okay. Yeah. So I'm like, law, because I did work at a law firm in high school, and I went to a high school that did law program, and I took a bunch of classes, and I was like, okay, law is a good thing to go into. Halfway through, I was like, this is BS. And I don't want to do it. And the college I was going to had both a law program and education program. So I was like, might as well go to that school, and I have a fallback either way. Definitely realized my freshman year that education was it and law was not what I wanted to do. I told my parents, and of course, deep down inside, they were probably a little sad. My mom was okay with it because she's in education.
Yeah.
My dad was just like, oh, crap. Let's see where this goes. So,
yeah. Was it an experience that you went through with a child that made you want to influence someone as an educator?
So my freshman year, I got a job on campus at like the daycare / school. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was just like, all right, I have a job. I need money. And that was like a validation for me that I wanted to do something in education and giving, and I love children, and anyone that knows me today still knows I love children.
Yeah.
So it was more of a validation than it was like an aha moment that I wanted to do education or something revolving children. So I went from education, and then I was like, I want to do special ed.
Right.
I became a best buddy. And for people who don't know what best buddy is basically become a friend with a person with special needs.
Got it.
And you hang out once a week. You kind of become like their mentor. You take them to big events. And it's just kind of something you did on your side. It was completely pro bono on your own. You didn't get rewarded, paid for, or anything. So I did that. I had a best buddy for all 4 years of college. And I realized like special ed is something I want to do. And in school, in high school, I went to a super inner city school in Chicago, and I saw the kids that had special needs were completely picked on, dismissed, not acknowledged. And there was something deep down inside where I was like, I want to help. Like, I know education is it, but special ed was a little bit more than just the bare minimum.
What made you decide, okay, I want to go to LA? The way you're painting the picture, it was just like, okay, you're going to be in Chicago for a minute because it seemed as if you found your purpose there. But then you decided to move to the bright lights of LA, or dim lights, depending on what corner you go to. But
it wasn't more so me deciding. I've always been someone who loved to travel and explore and be the odd one out. So I was working at a private school in Lincoln Park in Chicago. And, you know, that school consists of a lot of the kids whose parents were either celebs, athletes, something big.
Yeah.
And one of the parents was like, hey, you know, we work for Netflix. He works for Netflix. His aunt was one of the stars of Orange is the New Black. And they're like, we are moving to LA. And the one consistent thing in our child's life is education and the teacher. Would you want to move? And I'm like, yeah, no, not really. It
really?
Wasn't a thought. At first it wasn't. But then they gave me the full details. And I was like, heck yeah.
What was the full details?
Well, without putting it all out there, it was basically, you know, educators are not getting paid a lot in Chicago. And it was basically doubling and giving me a place to stay in their guest home, paying the entire moving fee. So all of that was covered. At that time, I was 24 when I got offered. And I'm like, what do I have to lose? If anything, I come back to Chicago, become a teacher for CPS. So I was like, all right, packing my bags, let's do this. Yeah. And gave my resignation in July, moved out here end of August.
So is it safe to say you're one of those people that you rather have your, like, the next step already in front of you before taking that leap?
Until I moved to LA. I can fast forward a little. So there was one point in my journey in LA where I literally walked into my boss's office without having an apartment, without having a job lined up, without having any, like, Indians. Like, I was raised of having, like, a plan before you make the next step. I was like, screw this.
Yeah.
I walked, I was like, I quit.
Like, what made you decide to flip that position?
Okay, so let's rewind back. I've had a crazy journey in LA.
Fast forward, it's great.
So I moved out here, or moved to LA with the family from Chicago. I was homeschooling him for about 7 months. Mm-hmm. And because of some, like, issues within the network and the dad being working on the business side and the aunt being an actual star on a series that became huge overnight when it dropped, it was like a conflict of interest. So he respectfully resigned his position and decided to move back to Chicago so his sister could have her fame. So I was like, okay, fine. I don't want to move back. Because I was like, I did not just uproot my entire life here. I stay here 7 months. I wasn't even getting my feet wet in LA. And they respectfully were like, okay, you can have, like, up until, you know, December to decide. After the holidays, you can come back and still have a job with us, or you can continue your journey in LA. So that happened. They moved back. I was in a relationship at that time, didn't have a place to stay because they provided my housing, gave me like a 2-week notice. And I was like, all right, hey, boyfriend, I'm moving in for a little bit till I figure it out. So at that point, I had no job, no actual home, no car yet. So all that was kind of missing. And I was like, just on a massive, I call it shopping for a career, right?
Yeah.
Massive, like, interview spree.
Yeah.
Of, I was going on like 2-3 interviews a day. I didn't realize how big homeschooling was on the West Coast.
Okay.
So out here, it's a lifestyle. Every other person homeschools their child. So I'm like, this is a huge market for me. But because it was in the middle of the school year, it was very hard for me to get a job. One day I was like, I'm over it. I'm done. I'm moving back. I literally went to FedEx, shipped home 3 boxes, got in the car, and I was around the corner from FedEx, and I got a phone call from the agency I was working with. I was like, hey, there is this interview I want you to take tomorrow morning. It's not exactly what you want, but I think it's a great stepping stone for you. Okay. And I was like, all right, whatever. So I went on the interview the next morning thinking of, like, I'm just going to do it because it's out of common courtesy of just doing it for the agency I worked for or was going through. And next thing you know, by the end of the day, the next day, I have a job offer. And the job offer was basically like babysitting / homeschooling their child.
Right.
And the pay was ridiculous. I didn't even know who I was working for. They didn't disclose the name. They didn't disclose who the person was. I met with the mom in a coffee shop, all this stuff. So they're like, hey, we can offer you a trial tonight for 4 days. And I'm like, what do? I go home to my boyfriend. I'm like, babe, what the heck? Like, I already shipped my stuff out. I have my ticket for next Wednesday, one way back to Chicago. He was like, what do you have to lose? And the day rate for my trial was a significant amount.
Yeah.
So I did it. By the end of the 3 days, I got a job offer that was something that an average person wouldn't want to resist and say no to. So I called FedEx and it was like, scratch that. Ship everything back. I was like, I want it all back. And I took the job, and that's where my actual journey in LA started.
Do you see that moment as like you got lucky, or that's just because that's a result of you working hard through that shopping career spree?
A little bit of both. Okay. I think at one time, and to be completely transparent, I sat in the living room and I am not a crier, and I was like just crying. I'm like, crap, what did I do? I gave up an amazing job in Chicago. I am now in this predicament in LA, and I'm just starting my quote unquote career. In that moment, I was super vulnerable, and I just didn't know. And luckily I had a boyfriend at that time that pushed me, and he was like, just do it. What do you have to lose?
Yeah.
Honestly, at that point, I didn't have much to lose besides coming back to Chicago and probably proving half of my family right.
That's always a tough thing, right? Because it's like, because when I moved to LA, after 6 months, the worst thing that can happen is I'll go back home. But then I realized as the 6 months was approaching, I was like, man, going back home is probably the worst, because it's almost like you're admitting failure.
Well, it was like that because I didn't do law. I wasn't one of my like 10 freaking cousins who did nursing, doctor, lawyer, something big, quote unquote big in like the Indian eye, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I became a teacher, average job. There was times where my cousins joke with me like, you're never going to break 100K, like please, ha ha ha, funny. And I have expensive tastes. So I was a person that hustled. I don't care if I was teaching full time. I had a side gig. I was babysitting all those celebrity kids on the weekends and making my money so I can take my trips to Mexico, take my trips to Europe. And I was doing that. So that moment when I was crying on that couch, I was like, crap, I am literally proving everyone that was giving me shit right.
Yeah.
I cannot go back without saying I tried my 110%.
Right.
So that last interview was my 110%, and it paid off.
You come to LA, home of a lot of transplants. You realize something, whether it be in the first 7 months, over the last 3 years. What is it you realize about this city?
Everybody is replaceable. Mm. You have to work your hardest. You do your bare minimum, you will not succeed. And my journey in the past 3.5 years, I literally worked ridiculous hours. I swallowed my pride a few times. I was literally traveling the world with this family. I was only one. I worked 13 days straight, jet lagged, with a kid jet lagged. I was working ridiculous hours. And I remember clocking in a time where I was super sick, was not feeling well, and I was on day 16 of working. I'm in Europe, and I was like, this is just ridiculous. And I was told by the family, they're great people, but I think it was that moment where I was like, I realized I was replaceable. It was told to me, you're replaceable. You can go home if you want. We can get you the next flight out. But this is a life, and if you want to be successful, and you have to start somewhere. And that's what I realized in LA. You have to start somewhere. And I've realized in the 3.5 years that the Midwest East Coast work ethic is so different compared to the West Coast. So they value it a lot more.
Because West Coast work ethic is slow.
It's horrible. So the only reason I became, I guess you can say, quote unquote, this successful at my age is because I implemented that work ethic that I was taught and brought up with and put on the West Coast. And it's rare that people find the ones that will work 16 days straight, jet lagged, sick, ready to go home, not have a day off, and not make a big deal out of it. And I just sucked up my pride, swallowed the pain, said, give me every medication you have over the counter that can make me feel better so then I can come back and do my job. And I did that, and they saw it, and they were like, holy shit, this girl can do it all.
Yeah. Do you still work for the family?
I do work with the dad, yes. Okay. So basically what I did was, when I mentioned earlier that I walked in there, I was like, I quit, I'm done, blah, blah, blah. Basically, I was working for them a year and a half. I did this, like, I promise you, I lived out of a suitcase. I didn't even have an apartment because I was never in one city more than like 5 days straight. And I'm a very like a silent observer. So in this time when I'm seeing everyone else around me work, I'm absorbing it and I'm listening to it. So when their dad was making a deal and talking about his business, I'm listening to all about it. So now, a year and a half later, when I'm going to quit, I know everything about it. I never knew how to manage a multi-million dollar estate. I did it overnight. So not only was I doing that for their child, I was managing their estate.
You became valuable as hell.
Yeah, because right. I learned it all. I was the only one in the room full of contractors telling them what they're doing is wrong, but in the most nicest way, because you know how a male dominant world can be.
Yes.
So I learned all that, and my boss and his wife will say, Dara, hit him with the Chicago Dara. Walked in there January 7th on a Friday to my boss, and he was like, why are you having this formal meeting with me? Like, you never have a formal meeting with me. And I'm so awkward because I don't like awkward, you know, things like that. And I'm like, here's my resignation. And he was like, what do you mean? Like, no way.
But at the same time, this time they couldn't have been like, well, you can be replaced.
No, because I was doing so much for them. I was essentially doing four people's job as one person. Right. And he knew that I took it all in. Times where someone would have cracked, I didn't. And I explained that to him, and I said, I lost a true value of my career in between all this. I became an educator, and I am not educating. And I wanted to...
Because your purpose was to always, no matter what, to educate or be of self-service to someone else.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was now managing estates, making sure cars have their titles and insurance. And it was just like, why? Yeah. And I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't care if the pay is great, if the experience is great. I want to go back to what I was going to do, which is education or something in the field of giving. And I explained that to him. And he was like, you're just an amazing person. I can't let you quit. And then he was like, all right, what is it that you really want?
Yeah.
And at that point, we would have a lot of conversations of him having a foundation because he was bullied as a child and adolescent. And so I was like, well, like you talk about your foundation. If you had a job for me at your foundation, I would take that in a heartbeat.
Which ties back into your purpose of where you said that, you know, well, one thing you couldn't stand seeing is people getting bullied.
Yeah.
So did everything feel like it was coming together back to your purpose again?
It was. And I explained that to him when he asked me what is it that I want and what is it that I wasn't getting from him. And I told him that. And come Monday morning, I had a contract in my inbox to kind of be the director of his foundation.
Those days were your worst days, right? Because I've always asked you, I'm like, Dara, what was the worst days for you? You never told me.
I mean,
so what was the worst days? The apartment crying situation?
No, there's something in between. There was times in my year and a half before I quit.
Yeah.
Where, for example, there was one time, and this is a very vulnerable story, but
welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, right. I had somehow thrown out my back or something, and I literally couldn't even move my neck left or right. I was left alone in the middle of Paris with their kid. Not even able to like pick up their kid if something was to happen, and like she can walk and everything. She's like, you know, a toddler. But I was like, what am I doing? Like, I'm supposed to be home for Diwali. I'm not this person. I swallowed my pride too much. I was in so much pain, and I'm like a very, I guess I can say like a tough person. I don't show emotion like that, but in the middle of like Paris, and I will never forget exactly what location it was, I just had like that one tear coming down, and I'm like, I'm so like, there was a lot of times where that happened.
Is there anything that you would have changed at all? Or are you one of those people where it's just like everything had to happen a certain way and there's no regrets?
I wouldn't be the person I am and be where I am if I didn't experience those things in life. I came out to LA without any friends. I didn't know a single person out here.
Samesies.
It was a lot of self-learning. I realized a lot about myself that I can do and who I am as a person, how strong I am. And it didn't matter what opinions were back in Chicago and what cousins and family members were telling me I wouldn't be quote unquote successful. Like, it was more like I did it. I did it myself. I hit rock bottom and I came back up and here I am type of ordeal. So
a lesson that you learned about yourself that you did not know before was how strong you are mentally as a person.
Totally.
Okay.
I was like, what will it take to break me down? And it took a lot to break me down to the point where I was like, you know, we can call my mother and she'll tell me there was a time where I literally FaceTimed her crying on the phone, was like, what am I doing here? Why am I in LA? Why am I going through this shit?
Yeah, I feel like for me, because in my worst days of like job rejections and like sleeping on a couch and a futon and stuff like that. And I would call my mom, and the first thing she would tell me, she's like, well, if you wanna come back, you can come back. But every single time my mom said that, I felt like, no!
Yeah, that was like, you're like, I'm not gonna do it. Yeah. I'll come back on my dime,
right? Yeah, yeah, because it's once again, it's like, if I come back, that means I admitted failure.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. You know what? It was one moment where everyone that talked shit about me, who said I probably wouldn't make it, regardless if it was family or friends, I was...
Go ahead, let it out.
This is that one moment. I literally was on a private jet by myself, uh-huh, and was getting flown to where the family was. And you know what I did? Because...
You took a snap. You
oh,
took a,
no, I took an Instagram and a snap and I said, I made it. Like, screw you all.
Did you send it to them individually? Like, what did you...
Posted as a story.
It was posted as a story.
To all my haters.
Yeah. It was a flex.
Yes. It was like flex.
The kids call it flex.
Whatever that means, God.
All right. So this last part, obviously the podcast here talks about the struggle, the success, and the story in between. Do you feel like you are successful, or do you have a lot more to go?
I'm at the beginning stages of where I am.
Yeah, but that's what this looks like.
Oh my God. It's hard work.
Yeah.
So... I became a director of this foundation. I didn't have much knowledge in it. There's so much behind this. Basically, you know, I was told this is what I want to focus on. Find places for me to donate my money, my time, etc. And that was completely different from being in a classroom. So I have took the past year to learn, to network, to absorb all the information. You know, at night I'm up reading books. I'm up reading different blogs. I have mentors of different foundations that do the same thing that my boss essentially wants to do and be. So I feel personally I have been successful for where I am and the age I am at. But can I be more successful? Absolutely. Overall, I want to be known as a friend and a family member who was always there for somebody no matter what. Like, of course, I want to be known as a successful person who did a lot of things, but I'm not there yet in my life, keyword yet. So I want to do that as well.
I've noticed that every single time, no matter what friend is around you, every time you're like, oh, have you done this or have you met this person? Anytime someone says yet, I haven't done it yet, the word yet, for some reason for you, it just like opens your eyes so much more than a
it's
yes or no.
It's because you're not knocking down the situation. You're not knocking down the aspiration to do something. You're saying, yes, I want to do it. Yes, I want to be there, but I have yet to do so. But what is that yet that is stopping you? You know, how can I help? So yet is just another word for me of like, I have it in my future. It is my goal, but I haven't gotten there yet.
Last question is, what would be the advice that you give to people in general, in a broader term, that are trying to make the leap into a bigger city or starting with nothing? What would be your advice to them now that you're looking back?
It's very hard, but don't give up. Cry it out, run it out, shake it out, dance it out, but don't give up. Mm. And I kept using the word like failure. Try to eliminate that word from your vocabulary. It's very hard to do as a human being, right? But I then realized I don't want to be a failure. So take that mentality out and give it your all. Go on that last interview. Send that last email. Work those 30 hours because you know you physically can. Emotionally, you might want to break down. But if you know that it's going to help in the long haul, in the long run, do it. Go to a bar, meet random people who are now your friends 4 years later. Like, I did all that. As a human being, I can say it officially, and if you would have asked me this 4 years ago, I probably wouldn't, but it's okay to be vulnerable. And it's, you're laughing, he's, just for everyone out there, he's laughing because he's never heard me say it, but he's wanted me to say this for so long.
I'm going
to
start getting emotional.
Be vulnerable. It's, you know, being at your lowest only makes you work 10 times harder.
Yeah.
So be vulnerable. It's okay. I feel like everyone has a story that someone else needs to hear to push them, to get them through that one little hump. And even if that means my story helps one person, that's probably why I did this. And also because you're my friend. And, you know, of course, I'm not going to say no.
You only said no about 15 times before.
Well, look, I'm a busy person. Yep, it's a work week. I am working. This is my quote unquote lunch break right now.
Thanks for having lunch with me.
With shots.
Since this conversation, Dara has moved back to Chicago and continues to successfully be a vital part of the Andrew Nikku Foundation. Cheers to Dara and her story. If you enjoyed today's conversation, feel free to subscribe and review the channel by searching Never Overnight on wherever you stream your podcast from. My name is Bernard Jacob, and thanks for listening.